recorded live from the lobby of the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C.
Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. This is the Junctional Thinking Podcast, and I'm your host, Pierre Vigilance. My career path has taken me through a number of different spaces. I've been through the clinical space, training clinically in emergency medicine, and then into the nonprofit world, doing some work in substance abuse specifically. From there, into the world of local government, where health departments were the places where I did my work, and then into academia, now as an advisory consultant to a couple of different types of entity. I've come to the understanding that if nothing else, health really requires us to be multi-sectoral in our approaches. We can't just have one single approach to healthcare. Healthcare itself can't take care of all health issues, and we need a bunch of different partners with different skills to actually address those issues. And some of those partners and skill sets come from social sectors that are outside of public health even. But today, the conversation and the show topic is really about one of the junctional thinking skills, behaviors, and ideals that we hold dear to us, which is learning from anywhere, and the notion that learning from anywhere means not only from different people, but also from different places. And my guests today have learned lessons from a number of places that I'll let them talk a bit about, and apply some of those lessons to the work that they're doing domestically and abroad. But it's really about how that global learning can get applied locally. So I'm really pleased to be joined by Priyanka Suryo and by Daquan Bruce, who do some work in their own rights that's sort of different from one another, but there's some similarities in the approaches that they take to what they do, and their paths have come together in a couple of different ways in the last couple of years. So I wanted to let them both introduce themselves and thank them again for joining me on the show. So who's going to jump in first with the intros?
Well, Priyanka. Thank you, Daquan. Hi, everyone. This is Priyanka Suryo, and currently I serve as the National Director for Data Analytics and Public Health Informatics for ASTHO, which is the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. So in that role, I support our state and territorial health agencies and their leadership in all things data analytics and in health IT. And my background has also taken me in a variety of ways, from research with academia and also in hospitals, to policy work and working on legislation and with advocacy groups and healthcare systems, to doing consulting work for the Department of VA, Veterans Health Administration, to now where I sit at ASTHO.
Thank you, Daquan. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thank you. So, Daquan Bruce, I'm right now working, doing my own thing as a business designer. And essentially what that means is I get to leverage my passion for creativity, creating, and not just in a typical design space, you know, using furniture or art and things like that, but designing for humans. And what that means is creating programs and initiatives where the solutions that are created from these are all human-centered. They allow people to solve issues in their own communities, but also we get to the very root cause of a lot of the issues that are ailing people. And so that has taken me around the world, essentially. You know, quite recently I was working on a project in Barcelona before moving here to D.C. and even doing some things in the federal government, hosting some workshops and things like that, and working on a few big projects right now that keep me kind of stretched. But it's always fun to do. I really love using my talents and gifts in service of others.
Now, you've spent some, thank you for that, and you spent some time abroad too, right? So your work in Barcelona was just very recent. We're going to get back to sort of what I'm going to ask Priyanka about, which was this fellowship that you both did, right, which was abroad. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so both of us actually met at a U.S. Leaders topical seminar that was hosted by the Department of State and University of Texas, Austin, for Gilman alumni and Critical Language Scholarship alumni. And essentially, this scholarship is something that's offered to undergraduate students, as well as, I believe, a couple of graduate students to study abroad. And so I know a lot of Gilman alumni that I've spoken to have a very similar story in that when we applied to this program, it was an opportunity for us to study abroad that we may not have had before or had even dreamt of. And it was also an opportunity for us to connect with our roots. So for me, I studied in India. I'm half Indian. And it was an opportunity for me to go to my home country. I'd never been there and really better understand where I come from and how that influences who I am. And so I was able to do that in 2011. And it was a very eye-opening and humbling experience where I got to understand the culture, the society, some of the history, as well as give back to the Indian community through different service learning and leadership opportunities. And okay. Some of that presented itself in teaching yes. English.
Okay, good, good, good. And how about you when you were in the fellowship? Where did you go?
So I did my time abroad in Senegal, in Dakar.
Okay.
And it was a very similar story to Priyanka. I grew up in a family where my uncle, I'll give him credit, he's a self-proclaimed historian. And so oftentimes when we were in trouble, we would learn. He would teach us using bad experiences and turning them into teachable moments, something I'm very grateful for. And he taught us a lot about our African-American history as a whole, but then as much about our family history as we could. And so as a kid, I grew up learning about, the different slave castles across West Africa, Gori Island, the effects of slavery, that persists today, and things like that. And what really caught my eye and my attention at the time was, the lessons about the transatlantic slave trade, specifically Gori Island. And so growing up, I tried to trace family history back as much as I can, but, trails end cold.
Right.
And so that eventually led me to Senegal, and I began to study more about it. And when it came time for me to go abroad, it was a place where I knew I had to go.
Had to go. Right, right, right. So you both kind of went back to places that resonated with you for personal and family reasons. Have you managed to go back since then?
Yes. I go back once a year now.
Okay. Well, how about you?
I have not, okay. But I have been corralling our family to try to go back in a meaningful way to connect with that history.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So tell me a bit about, some people will hear studying abroad or getting international experiences and think, well, I've barely been across town, let alone to the airport to leave the country. I don't have the resources to do that. How does something like that even happen? Both of you have described scenarios where, maybe at one point you thought the same thing, like you would never have necessarily thought that you'd have these sort of opportunities. What advice do you have for people out there who are thinking that that is the primary barrier to them being able to go, just lack of resources?
I will say that, I grew up in Chicago, south side of Chicago, and for a large part of my life and the people around me, going out of the country was something that a lot of us only believed celebrities could do. Mm-hmm. I don't remember growing up with individuals in my community who routinely traveled the world. And if they were traveling, it was maybe to another state, to Indiana, which is right up the block, or, far to Florida or Texas. But that developing, having the experience to develop that global perspective wasn't something that I readily knew people who had. And so for me, it became a fact-finding mission of how can I do this on my own? It intrigued me, and I began to seek out resources for myself. And one of those was just befriending people of different backgrounds and community. One thing I will say about Chicago is that it's a city... It's a global city. People from everywhere are there. And even though it's very segregated in a way, you can go to any part of town and find people from all over the world.
Okay.
And so that's what I began to do. I began to seek out, you know, events, cultural events, and make friends of different backgrounds. And even now, my closest group of friends, most of whom are from Chicago, are all of different nationalities, ethnic origins, things of that nature. And it wasn't until college when I was able to really, actually high school, when I was able to really gain resources. There are tons of resources, financial, you know, spiritual, you know, all types of resources for individuals who want to learn more about the world. And I began to see those, and it really opened up the world for me.
I got you. Got you. What part of the country were you living in when you traveled from? Where were you traveling from to get to India? Were you in this area, the D.C. area?
No. So I moved to the D.C. area about 7 years ago. Before that, I was actually in Florida.
Okay.
In a very small town where, like Taquan, not many people had traveled abroad. In fact, a lot of people are still there that I know from childhood. So it's pretty low resource, not a lot of exposure. And there's actually a lot of ignorance there about different cultures. So having parents who are from different countries and trying to explain to people what I am,
right.
Was often met with resistance, people not wanting to understand or just saying, well, you look this way, so I'm going to categorize you that way.
Oh, I see. So people decided for you.
Yes.
Okay.
So for me, and one thing I would say to other people is that I think it kind of starts with being open-minded.
Right.
About wanting to understand and learn about other cultures. For me, it was built in my DNA. I was going to learn about other cultures because I come from two different
right.
Ones. But it started with reading books and going to libraries and museums yeah. and cultural events and having a more open-minded appreciation for mm-hmm. just different groups. Mm-hmm. And that eventually led me to D.C., which is a very international city.
Right.
So I'm surrounded by it all the time. And one thing also that I'd like to say is that it doesn't require you to travel all the way across the world to experience
yeah, absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
You know, you can experience it if you're looking for it and if you're open to it
right.
in your own backyard.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny you say that because I spent some time in Baltimore, obviously some time here in Washington, and even in London, you've got people who haven't crossed town or are very resistant to even going across town. You say South Side of Chicago, it's a thing to be from the South Side of Chicago. Mm-hmm. There's a pride in that, but then there are lots of people who may never have gone to the North Side of Chicago.
Absolutely.
Right? And it's not that far, let alone to another state that you mm-hmm. were referring to. And coming from parts of the country where people are pretty insular, I think can make it a bit easier to sort of just be like, well, this is how it is, and this is how it's going to be, and that's it. But I wanted to talk for a quick second about, when we come back in just a quick second, I wanted to talk a little bit about how comfortable it was to do that. The voices you've been hearing are those of Priyanka Suryo, who is a data... You do a lot of things at ASHTO. You have like two, three things in the title, but then there's also like research and programming and data analytics and informatics. And there's a whole bunch of stuff. So all things data at ASHTO. And Daquan Bruce, who is a I'd call you a human-centered designer.
Absolutely.
Basically, a design thinker. And you are listening to the Junctional Thinking Podcast on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. So what I was about to ask you both was about comfort. Like, how comfortable was it? And reading books, pretty comfortable, because you pull a book off the shelf, get a resource from the library, whatever it is, online, read it. But when you had to go leave and go to speaking to other people, getting out into these different spaces that you were referring to, Daquan, and addressing some of these issues that you had to sort of talk to people about, well, I'm from here and here because this is where my family's from and this is who I am, not what you're thinking. How comfortable was that for you? And if it was uncomfortable, how did you get over that discomfort?
Yeah, so in the beginning it was pretty uncomfortable because just having to deal with people categorizing you in one way and not really being open just in and of itself is an uncomfortable situation. And I think it creates, especially when you're growing up and when you are young and still trying to understand the world, a lot of self-doubt.
Right.
And so I've had to learn to kind of overcome that. Mm-hmm. And part of that journey has been being more comfortable in my own skin and what I have to bring to the table. Mm. And also creating that space for other people that kind of safe space, that open space where we can accept each other's differences and ideas. And it's taken, I think, my career journey to learn that, and meeting people like Daquan and other young leaders who have traveled, who encourage me to continue to be this person who I am and to be comfortable in my skin.
Okay, good, good. Yeah. So how about for you?
For me, it was extremely uncomfortable. It was essentially throwing away everything I thought I knew about the world, and all of my preconceived notions about cultures and languages and even, to an extent, religion. You know, I had to set myself aside in order to truly be empathetic and see things from someone else's perspective. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that required a lot of, you know, long, hard looks in the mirror and figure out who am I. And I had to really get comfortable with being sometimes the idiot in the room. And not saying idiot because it's being a fool, but idiot in the sense of being ignorant. Like, I don't know. And I had to be that person, you know, in order to grow, you have to go through those phases. And so, you know, there'll be times where I was, you know, in circles and people would share a joke and I had no cultural or background or, you know, context to really know what it was about. Well, so I was the odd one out. You know, there are times where I just didn't know the language. And so I had to put myself in a position to make a fool of myself. You know, I'm trying to learn these languages. I'm trying to, you know, learn more about this culture. I'm trying to be a part of these things so that I won't, you know, be the same person that I was when I came into this circle. And it took a lot. But I will say that I'm very grateful that my mom really led that for me. As a kid, she would, you know, back in the day when Borders was around, would take me to Borders.
The bookstore, for those of you who may not know what that is.
Yeah, a bookstore.
A physical structure where books are housed.
Yeah, so it's like you don't even see those anymore unless they're like antique. But, you know, we would go to Borders and she would let me read books from all over the world. And there was once where she sat me down and she was like, "You're going to learn another language." And I was like, "Mom, I already speak Spanish." She was like, "No, you're going to learn another language." And so she brought me a book in hieroglyphics. And I was like, "What is this?"
Yeah.
And we sat there and I learned hieroglyphics. I went through that book over and over and over until I learned the hieroglyphic language. And I could decipher the games and stuff that they had in the book. And then that led me into learning French and then into learning Latin. And it just became a internal culture within me of being uncomfortable. Uncomfortable is now who I am, you know, okay. And I'm not afraid to be in those spaces.
So Priyanka, as I'm listening to Daquan talk about what it sort of spurred him into doing, what, given the experience that you had growing up in Florida and then getting to go abroad and understanding and learning more about yourself, how has it been influential to you, this sort of experience of getting abroad and getting out of comfort spaces?
Yeah, so it's interesting because for a long time when I had that pivotal experience in India, I thought, okay, it's going to be, I knew I was interested in the health space. I'm like, it's global health. That's going to be my focus. Right. I'm going to focus abroad. But when I was actually in India, I learned about how so many people in India who are looking for opportunities leave and don't come back. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when I was volunteering, and I was actually volunteering for a very marginalized population, the migrant workers community, so they have to travel around India for work, and their children can't get formally enrolled in schools or in healthcare and anything like that. And just made me think about, well, who am I leaving behind or what am I missing in my own backyard because I want to go somewhere else?
Wow.
So it had me rethink that whole thing about how, yes, you can still be connected. We are a very connected world, and I still anticipate in my future career bridging that gap between domestic work that I do now with all of our states and territories and with the global work. But it had me take a much closer look at bringing back what I've learned, what I've been exposed to home, and really taking a hard look at what's going on here that I can contribute to, that they need me to contribute to. But not to say that I haven't traveled. I've traveled actually quite extensively in the U.S. and to our territories as part of my work. So I've traveled to almost 20 states in my time of working with ASTHO,
Right. Where
I get a really nice dose of the different flavors and cultures and styles and comfort levels of these different places. And so I still get that exposure to so many different things in our states and in our territories just working here.
So I wanted to ask you both, sort of, this is really good, from the perspective of impact on your work, you've touched on it a little bit, both of you have, but if there was like a number one thing that you would tell people about the value that you get from interacting with others, we'll just call it that, right? Because it could be interacting with others locally, it could be globally. What has that impact been for you in two different spaces? One, the personal space, and then two, the professional space. So we'll start off with both of you talking about, so personally, what has it done for you? What has it changed for you? I'll start with you, Priyanka.
Sure. So personally, I think it's encouraged me to be proud of who I am and to really dig deep and let that show and share that more broadly and widely with people.
Okay.
And I think that's important, is being comfortable and digging deep to show that to other people. So that's personal, as well as just me finding my roots and better understanding that.
Important.
And then professionally, it's really encouraged me, again, as I mentioned, to take a harder look at my backyard and what I can offer here, but also looking to other countries for examples of how to do things well. You know, the U.S. is not the only country that does things very well. In some cases, they're not doing things well at all. So there are so many other countries to look at here, and so many things that I think we stand to learn from, especially when it comes to being more intentional about health and wellness and about community and about how community can pull together to essentially make the whole better.
Yes, good. Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree 100%. Personally, for me, it's made me comfortable and okay with being different. A lot of people, you know, being a Black American male from Chicago, there's a box that we get put in where we are supposed to be these types of stereotypes.
Right.
We are supposed to embody these things. And I won't go into those stereotypes because even though that is some things that people are and that they like, it doesn't define them, you know, who they are internally.
Yes, absolutely.
And so, you know, opening myself up to all these experiences made me realize that it's okay to be different. Like, you know, and it doesn't make me any less of a man. It doesn't make me any less of, you know, a Chicagoan. And it doesn't make me any less, you know, of a human being as a whole.
Okay.
And so, you know, just that realization, you know, that I can like other things. You know, I can listen to K-pop not speaking Korean. I can, you know, live in China, you know, only speaking a little Mandarin. I can do all these things and still be a Black man in America.
Good.
And be proud of it. And professionally, it's really developed my emotional intelligence quotient. You know, and emotional intelligence, essentially four aspects, you know, self-management, self-knowledge, relationship management, and then, you know, that social engineering piece of it. And it's allowed me to really develop that ability to communicate across cultures, across boundaries, and really be a unifier of people. I love the fact that in everything that I do, all of my work, I get to work with people and I get to listen to their stories. And I get to, you know, really bring them together. I have friends who I'm sure they wouldn't be friends because they, you know, if it wasn't for that connection that I was able to find with them, not to brag, but just to say that being someone who listens and who learns from every aspect of my life and things that people I come in contact with, you're really able to find the commonalities that unite us as a whole.
Sweet. Okay, good stuff, good stuff. Well, we're going to take a short break. You've been listening to the Junctional Thinking Podcast, broadcasting live on Full Service Radio from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C., and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You are listening to the Junctional Thinking Podcast, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. on Full Service Radio. I'm your host, Pierre Vigilance, and I am joined today by Priyanka Suryo and by Daquan Bruce, who are, you know, individuals who are doing a lot of social impact work in their own rights, both at work and outside of work. Daquan is a human-centered designer, Priyanka as a project manager and data analytics / informatics expert. Fair to say. Yeah, kind of. We'll take that. All right. And we've been talking about a few different things, and they both did a really nice job sort of talking about the experience and the value of being abroad, but the fact that the lessons that they learned abroad didn't have to necessarily come from abroad. They could have come from right across town. But there were processes that they deliberately underwent to learn more about themselves and people around them that helped them get in the mindset to even engage in getting the resources together to go to India in Priyanka's case and Senegal in Daquan's case. But I wanted to sort of pivot from the sort of personal journey, sort of the internal personal journey or the self-reflective personal journey, more to the work, right? And the spaces that you're both in, which is, you know, I'd like to say it's probably a social impact and community development sector. And I know that you have different foci within that, but I think community development's a good umbrella under which to put all of the work that goes on. And when you think about what you've learned from abroad, because you made a comment before, Priyanka, about there are great lessons to be learned from abroad. And I wonder sometimes, and you know, I've talked about this, you know, you'll listen to the early morning news and there'll be a new study that will say, you know, left-handed pregnant women in Norway had this particular outcome from eating half an avocado every morning. And so everyone should eat half an avocado every morning. And it's like, okay, that's a great study, but it's limited with respect to the who and the what and the where, and may not really be applicable elsewhere. So why are we even talking about it on X morning show? How do you decide what's worth bringing home versus what's not, regardless of where it comes from? When it comes from outside of this, of your normal sort of sphere of influence, how do you decide what to bring inside the house to actually put to work in the kitchen?
Yeah, this is a really good question because it happens all the time. And I think this area also illuminates what's a huge gap in healthcare and population health in America, for the simple fact that we don't have a very good way of capturing all of the health outcomes for all of the different populations. And so I think when I'm thinking about what to bring home, looking at homogenous populations or very wealthy countries is not a really good model of practice, because essentially working in public health, you're looking to service the entire population, and that means looking at where the gaps are and where there's particular communities that are disadvantaged or that don't have access to those resources or that have the poorest health outcomes. And sometimes those are equal to what's happening over and abroad across the world. So one really good example of this is in terms of HIV/AIDS.
Yes.
The rates are almost as bad in D.C. as they are in parts of Africa. So looking at what is being done.
We've got to be clear, in parts of D.C.
Parts of D.C., exactly.
As they are in parts of the continent of Africa. And what's amazing about that is the continent of Africa is a massive place, but Washington, D.C. is not, right? It's a small place. And so for there to be the variance between one part of Washington and another part is a problem. But go ahead, sorry.
No, exactly. And then there are certain parts of our country and in my work where I've gotten to better understand this, but still feel like a lot of Americans are generally ignorant about this topic, about indigenous and First Nation tribes whose outcomes are just really devastating and borderline third world country kind of outcomes in terms of their education level, their access to resources, their life expectancy being almost 20 to 30 years less than most Americans. Like, these are things that I think a lot of people don't understand or appreciate, and we don't even have good data on them. So these are just in a couple of locations where there may be that connection or that partnership or someone who cares enough to do that work, but we still have a lot of gaps in terms of the data we have on these populations.
Okay. Daquan, how about from your perspective?
You know, from my perspective, one thing that I've noticed is that, at least from the Chicago side of things, a lot of the issues we face in Chicago stem from a degradation of community. People aren't not necessarily looking out for one another, but that sense of community, that sense of togetherness, has faded. And, you know, in my short lifetime, I've seen it. And you always hear, you know, the older individuals talking, you know, back in my day, this was the case. But it's so true. It's so true.
You'll be saying it soon, too.
You know, I've seen it, and I've experienced it, and I myself am a victim of it. But, you know, lessons from abroad, I've come to understand that even though things may seem better, in a sense, from my perspective, community-wise, I've learned that social norms and economic systems, much like political systems, are not neutral. And so it's very difficult. And what I mean by that is that just because something works, a social norm works, or a political system or an economic system works in one place, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work in another. And that's because there's years and even centuries of social and conditioning and norms that happen that influence the way people act and influence how people perceive different things. And so, you know, I'm always very cautious about bringing lessons back, bringing traditions and norms back when I travel, and I just try to find the lessons within them and incorporate those into my life and see how I can help, you know, others with that. And one of the biggest ones is the idea of simply caring for one another. Everywhere I've traveled, I've noticed that people live a certain way in these places, but there's always that sense of community where the individual next door, the individual down the block, truly cares for you as a person. And that's something that I really want to, and I've always tried to, you know, incorporate into my daily life, into my giving of to other people, and into just my social relationships.
Right. All right. I'm pulling the pin out of the grenade. You ready? Priyanka moved in her seat. She's like, oh my gosh, what's about to happen? I was at a meeting yesterday. Great meeting, by the way. Shout out to Mady Henson and the Washington Regional Area Grantmakers for their annual meeting yesterday. It's fantastic. Had a really good time meeting a bunch of really good people working in the philanthropy space in this region. One comment that came up that Daquan, your comment just now about degradation of community, and then Priyanka, your comment about lessons, using the lessons from other places. One question, comment that came up was, we are in a very, very interestingly but highly divisive time right now in this country's sort of, not just rhetoric, but actual sort of way of being. And so given that, and given the highlighting of differences that's constantly going on right now, there may be some resistance to taking lessons from places that are different from us, because we're supposed to be trying to do something, make something great again, right? So given the timing of things, and I heard a particular answer to this yesterday, and I'm interested in your take on this, is now a good time for us to be taking your mode of operation, which is multi-sectoral, multifaceted, different people insights, is now a good time for us to do this, or should we be holding off? Should we wait a bit? Should we wait for this stuff, whatever you want to call it, that's happening right now to smooth out?
I have so many thoughts about this, because
we have a little bit of time.
America is different. We have so many different people here who are coming from all over the place. And that's how we started. That's how we essentially were formulated as a country, and how we've continued to grow. And it's become more and more different, and maybe more and more colorful. And some people don't like that and are afraid of it. Mm-hmm. And I think I experienced that when I was younger, where people said, no, you're just this, or I don't want to learn about your culture. But we are that. We've been that. There are so many people now who finally feel like they have a voice and that they can speak up. So mm-hmm. I would say we should be shouting from the rooftops, because now is the time where we have numbers and we have support of each other. We see the other person out there doing their thing, and we salute them. And I feel happy to be part of that, and I want to keep that momentum going, because we are different, and that's what is and can make America beautiful and great. But we're not there yet, because we haven't yet had that platform.
Okay.
I agree. I think now is the perfect time. Mm-hmm. Because in times where things are, quote unquote, going well for everyone, and, you know, it's not as contentious, things are not as politically divisive or socially divisive, there's no incentive for people to change. There's no incentive for people to grow. People think, oh, well, things are going well for me right now, so why would I want to expand? Why would I want to expand my mindset? Why would I want to change, you know, these things? It's only in times of adversity that we start to realize that we should do something. And we're in that phase right now. No matter where you lean on the political or economic or, you know, whatever spectrum you're looking at, now is the time to expand and change, because when you expand and change now, you're able to learn these lessons from the trials and tribulations that we're currently going through.
Right.
And if we wait until things calm down, you know, then we're going to forget. And we've seen that time and time again, is that history repeats itself.
It does.
It really does. And the thing that changes it is when you are able to reflect, you learn from the trial, and then you move to make a better future. And so I think if we begin to take these lessons and really apply them, you know, where they fit in our lives and in our communities, then we're going to have a better future.
Good.
I have like an immediate thought to that, though.
Go ahead.
Because I think the difficulty here is that there are people who are very resistant and afraid, and it can sometimes seem so discouraging and almost impossible to move the needle. Mm-hmm. And I see that all the time in working with our states, that some states are not on the same page. They lean very differently, even on a word such as health equity.
Mm. Right. Right.
Wow.
We're going to, wow. Yeah, okay. So on that equity piece, this is very interesting because I've talked about this with a couple of different guests. And so you know, you are listening to the voices of Daquan Bruce and Priyanka Suryo on the Junctional Thinking Podcast, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. And this equity question and the conflation, as I keep referring to it, of equity and equality, mm-hmm. The notion that they are one and the same, and people who have listened to this podcast before know that, you know, we've talked a bit about the fact that they're not the same, and that Absolutely. Giving everybody the same exact things doesn't help everyone see over the fence, but giving people the right height step to see over the fence, or right height box to see over the fence, may require different height boxes, and it's mm-hmm. a little bit more difficult to just giving one size to fit all. But the thing that you're both saying that's not only interesting but also highly resonant right now is this issue of fear. And this is why I was asking about discomfort before, because what we are uncomfortable about for ourselves with respect to what we do for our own self-development leaches out or sort of bleeds into what we might be uncomfortable doing with respect to our work, or what we might be uncomfortable doing with respect to our civic engagement, mm-hmm. etc. And what you're talking about is being civically engaged and doing what's necessary to cross these barriers that people have between cultures, genders, races, or whatever it is, and then pushing towards particular outcomes mm-hmm. that we can all agree on. But people are afraid, and fear makes people sort of insular. And it's sort of like, you're going to change something, you're going to take something from me, I'm going to have less of something. I was listening to something the other day. PBS had this great show about artificial intelligence and how that is going to change the future of work. And there are people who are actually in denial about the fact that their jobs are going to be taken. People who are, say, truck drivers. We're like, you know, I don't see a machine being able to do all the things that I can do in a truck. Newsflash. It's already here, mm-hmm. right? And the idea that things are going to be, that things aren't going to happen that will impact you is something that we kind of block out. We sort of say, oh, that's not going to impact me. I'm going to be fine. But we're not going to be, unless we're actively getting into these, not only conversations, but changing how we do things. And so I think that it's an uncomfortable thing, again, to think about how do we right now do the things that are necessary to change how we develop community. Daquan, you had talked about community degradation. Do you have any sort of tools that you think should be more universally used to reverse some of that community degradation process? And then I'm going to turn to you, Priyanka, and ask you about some similar stuff. We have a couple minutes left.
Yeah, there are tons of things. The top one that I use, it's a simple tool that in the design thinking space people use all the time, and it's essentially the five whys. You know, that gets you down to the root of your action. Like, why do you want to do these things? Yes, why do you want to go this route? Why do you want to pursue this career? And it's something that I have to continue, because it's an iterative process. I have to continually do on myself.
Right.
Why? What is my motivation? And so when I speak to people and I mentor people and I even, you know, try to, you know, help people, I always try to get them down to the root of their issue, the root of their motivation, of their goals. And I feel as though if we do that simple thing, just asking a question, we realize that all of us have very similar motivations, very similar goals, very similar desires in life. And that's, it's basic. We want to be secure. We want to be happy. We want to be loved. We want to, you know, have family and friends and people who care about us.
Gotcha.
And there are all these social and economic blocks and barriers that come that derail us from this this basic need, this basic desire.
Common space.
Exactly. Okay. So you know, that's a simple tool. It's just asking someone that.
Talking to one another. An important thing to do. Priyanka, what are your thoughts with respect to like tools that you think we could be using to sort of accelerate the top tool that you would want to put in play to accelerate building a better community?
So I'll answer that kind of in a roundabout way because I wanted to touch on the artificial intelligence.
But it's got to take less than 60 seconds.
Got it. So one thing I wanted to say just about artificial intelligence is that you talked a little bit about how truck drivers are in kind of disbelief. And I think there's also a danger in how artificial intelligence is replacing jobs, because mm-hmm. then where are those people going to go?
Absolutely. Yeah. Whole other show we need
yes.
to do on it. Yes, absolutely.
But to that point, I think technology, it can be a very useful tool. Just right now, who controls it is not representative of everyone. And the way that algorithms and things are being coded is biased. Mm. And so the tool that I'm using and something that Daquan mentioned is about mentorship. And it's also a little bit about community. And part of that for me is not only seeking mentors who are very committed to diversifying how we code, manage, and use technology as the tool to improve things, but also fostering the next generation of folks. And so that means me actively seeking or taking time out of my day to look for those people who look like me or who don't have that opportunity or come from backgrounds who haven't traditionally been at that table. And also taking that leadership role and not being afraid of that to sit at the table and represent for those people.
Good, good, good. Absolutely. Great answer. And actually, I love the fact that I don't prep any guests for this show. That's a disclaimer I put out there. But folks talk about exactly the stuff that we talk about all the time in Junctional Thinking. So thank you both so much for coming in and doing the show with me today, Priyanka Suryo. Daquan Bruce. This show is broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. It's called Junctional Thinking. I'm your host, Pierre Vigilance, and we will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.